This is Tabitha Whiffle with the Cygnus Law Enforcement Group podcast. We're sitting down with Kevin Saylor, a sergeant with the Westminster, Colorado Police Department. Sergeant Saylor has been with the Westminster PD for 28 years, is a senior master instructor for Taser International, has been working with them for 9 years. He's agreed to talk to us about how less lethal tools have been integrated into the tactical toolbox and what he teaches his students about conductive energy device use. He also shares thoughts on an alternative theory in this area that says maybe today's officers are too quick to go to a less lethal compliance tool where verbal coercion may have worked to defuse potentially violent situations or subjects with a little more effort. I just want to thank you for agreeing to share your knowledge with the Officer at Common Law Enforcement Technology, Law Enforcement Product News audience. Today, the issue that I really want to get into is about less lethal tools. In a candid conversation that I had with a police official, he mentioned that he thinks some of the old school policing methods are being overlooked in favor of using less lethal tools like conducted energy devices, because they're reliable, and his opinion was that they are getting overused. Where do you fall on that argument?
Really, I think what we're talking about primarily when people are saying that it's being overused is mm-hmm. OC and tasers, because those mm-hmm. are the things that are readily available. I mean, some departments do carry bean bags, but that's not something that gets really used a whole lot, in my opinion. It certainly doesn't at my agency. And I think primarily when they're making these claims, it's probably the OC spray and the taser that they're talking about. Well, I actually disagree pretty strongly with that, because,
okay.
And again, I'm basing a lot of it on the experience I have with my own agency, but also with surrounding agencies, and I've also gone to a number of states to provide taser training and have had an opportunity to, you know, see how things are done in other states as well. And I think, if anything, maybe it's even the other extreme. I think we've reached a point where, and I see this a lot when we do our scenario-based training, is that there's a tendency for officers to over-verbalize, particularly mm-hmm. when it comes to issuing warnings. They just want to continue to issue warning after warning after warning and actually hesitate to use any kind of physical force. And I'm more concerned about that than I am the perception that some people might have that, you know, that we're too quick to go to these tools. I think that obviously technology has taken some quantum leaps here in the last 10 years or so, and to not take advantage of those simply because that's not how we used to do things, I think that's kind of some backwards thinking and
mm-hmm.
certainly not to our advantage. I mean, we need to take the advantage of technology that we can, and so that we can do our job safer. You know, we take an extreme amount of risk every day, and if somebody's advocating that we take even more risk unnecessarily, I think that's flawed logic.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the use of force scale. What is the policy at Westminster, or what do you teach your classes?
That's
right.
Up to each individual agency to decide where they're going to put the taser or any other less lethal tool on their use of force spectrum. So they don't really get into that
okay.
that issue about where to put it. I mean, they have some sample policies, and as a general rule, you know, they encourage that it be placed low enough on the use of force spectrum that it can be used early on in a confrontation. That's where you're going to get the most benefit from these things.
Okay. So when you teach those classes, you have to operate pretty much as an employee of Taser,
yes.
not
yeah,
from
I'm
the background.
Yeah, I'm a contract employee of Taser when I do that. I'm not
okay.
representing my department when I teach those
so
classes.
Are you able to offer an opinion on where you think it's used?
Yeah, I can do
okay.
that. And,
okay.
and usually what I'll do is I'll give an example of how it's used at my department. And I, of course, give a disclaimer that I'm not saying that this is the only way. This is just the way it is at my department, and I always offer to provide students with a copy of my department's policy on it if they wish. And obviously a private company can't dictate policy to a law enforcement agency, so they give a lot of examples of taser use, you know, that's basically, and they actually have a graph in there, that a survey that they did where like over 4,000 agencies responded back to this survey, and about 86% of them have taser use at the same level as pepper spray. So
okay.
as a general recommendation, that's kind of where they recommend that it should be placed, but again, that's up to each individual agency.
when there is critique of conducted energy devices, and that could be just in reports from the news media,
mm-hmm.
or I know that ACLU and Amnesty International have joined in on that critique several times. Where are they coming from?
Well, particularly as far as the ACLU and Amnesty International, in my opinion, they all have a hidden agenda. Again, this is my own personal opinion. I believe that they have such an anti-police, anti-law enforcement bias that it would not matter what we did, they would complain about it. You know, they're the agencies that have been clamoring for years for this kind of technology, particularly with tasers or some of these other less lethal devices as well. Now we have them. We're having extreme success with them. We've significantly reduced injuries to officers and suspects. We've saved untold numbers of lives, and all they can do is gripe and complain about it and claim that, you know, that we're killing people with tasers and we're killing people with pepper spray and all these things. And they absolutely have no scientific or medical evidence to back up their claims. It is strictly an opinion that they have that they cannot back up. And to the contrary, particularly again with the tasers, there have been multiple medical studies, both on animals and humans, and in more recent years, there's been a lot of human medical study done. And the research has shown that the taser is generally safe. Now, obviously, anytime you're using some type of physical force, there's always a risk for injuries, but they have never been proven to kill somebody. In fact, I was just reading an email right before this interview that Taser sent out regarding a lawsuit that they had filed against three medical examiners in Ohio because the medical examiners had ruled that the taser was a contributing cause to these people who had died after a taser application. And in these situations, the officers who were involved were being criminally charged. And so Taser felt that that was just, you know, a gross error on the part of these medical examiners. They filed a lawsuit, and they just won that lawsuit. The results of those autopsies have been overturned because the medical examiners were not familiar with Taser technology and perhaps even had some kind of personal bias against them. I don't know. But, you know, bottom line is they are not killing people. And when Amnesty and ACLU come out and get all this hype going about people dying in police custody and that the taser or some other less lethal device was the cause of it, they have no medical evidence to back that up. And what essentially it has become is kind of a fundraising motive for them because, you know, they're constantly in the public's eye. They're you know, on NBC Nightly News and all these other shows where they're given the opportunity to get up and give their opinions on these matters, and it keeps them in the public eye. It keeps revenue coming in for them, and I really think that's what's driving all this. A guy that wrote a book about his theory on why the media is so opposed to tasers or anti-tasers, and it's called Why the Media Hates Tasers or Fears Tasers, I believe is the name of it. But his theory is because when tasers were first developed and officers were having a lot of success with them, particularly down in Arizona because Taser is in Scottsdale, the media down there was very pro-Taser and they just thought this was the greatest thing that had come out in years. Well, then as time went on and some statistics started getting published, particularly about how it was reducing the number of police shootings, his theory is that the media realized, hey, this is going to affect our bottom line because, you know, that's what sells papers, that's what gets TV ratings, is all this controversy over police shootings and things like that. Because all of a sudden, just for no apparent reason, all of a sudden they flipped and all of a sudden they became very opposed to tasers, very critical of them. And so that was his theory, was that, you know, it's all money-driven, that they realized it was affecting their bottom line because there are some pretty stunning statistics from some major cities, particularly like Seattle and Miami, that when they started using tasers, they saw a huge drop in their officer-involved shootings. In fact, both of those agencies went over a year without an officer-involved shooting after they started using tasers, which was unprecedented. I mean, that's just unheard of. And it's not necessarily that their officers are using tasers in deadly force confrontations, but like I mentioned earlier, if you have that placed properly on the use of force spectrum where it can be used early on in a confrontation, it's preventing a lot of these situations from escalating further to where it becomes a deadly force issue. And that's really the, you know, where these statistics are coming from. And so, again, it's affecting the bottom line of the media. And so that's his theory, and I certainly think there's some substance to that as to why they're so opposed to tasers. And, of course, media, again, just isn't generally law enforcement friendly to begin with. So
your position is that modern today's officers don't escalate too quickly. But let's talk about training a little bit. And I know that you do training as an employee of Taser. But when it comes to police training on all of the tools in the toolbox,
mm-hmm.
That's something that each department would do on their own. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, and that does vary somewhat from one department to the next.
Okay. What's your experience that training in these areas have been adequate, inadequate?
I think they're adequate because, I don't see, and from my perspective, I don't see an overuse. Now, sometimes you have to be a little careful when you make these general comments because certainly
mm-hmm.
there's going to be exceptions to everything. And certainly we've had a couple officers on our department that we felt were maybe a little bit too quick to go to their taser or their OC spray or whatever. And it is a training issue. You know, you have to reinforce in training that, you know, verbal dialogue is a form of use of force. And, you know, just because somebody is being verbally noncompliant doesn't mean you're just automatically going to, you know, use your taser or your OC or something like that on them. So just to give you an example, in the last 6 years, I've reviewed in excess of 400 use of force reports just from my department alone. Anytime a taser is deployed as the taser coordinator for my department, I review that use of force report to make sure that, you know, the proper procedures were followed, the proper training was followed, that it conforms to our department policy on use of force and everything else. And out of that 400, I've been trying to think here the last couple of days, and I know it's less than 10 that have been questionable, and out of that 10, probably half or less of those where they were actually policy violations. Some of the others were, you know, didn't necessarily violate the letter of the policy, but kind of violated the spirit of it. And again, it was situations where people were just a little bit too quick and kind of forgot about the verbal dialogue form of force. And once we went back and discussed that with them, that corrected it, and it was no longer an issue. So I think that there, from my perspective, there really is no overuse of these things. And certainly I think that the training that officers are receiving is adequate. Otherwise, we'd be having a huge problem with that.
Okay. When you say that the instances where policy was violated, some of them it was more the spirit of the policy, can you explain a situation?
Yeah, I mean, we had one, again, where it was just a verbal noncompliance. The guy, you know, the officer was trying to tell this guy, giving him some instructions on what to do, and the guy just wasn't complying. He wasn't resisting. He wasn't actually threatening or anything, but he just turned to walk away. Well, in that case, the officer could have issued a warning, should have issued a warning, but instead he just went to his taser and shot the guy with the taser. It wasn't necessarily, you know, we do allow a taser use at that level of force where, I think maybe he did actually give him a warning, but, you know, I think he could have gone a little further with that before he just, you know, turned around and shot the guy in the back with a taser. And so we had some issues with that. But again, we sat down, discussed our concerns with the officers, or with that officer, and it's never been a problem since.
What goes through your mind in a situation where you're contemplating using a conducted energy device?
Well, obviously, you know, you've got to have some kind of physical threat there. I mean, there has to either be, through words or actions from the suspect, there has to be some kind of threat involved. So, again, just because somebody's being mouthy or belligerent doesn't mean that you're going to use the taser on them. But if I anticipate that the person is going to not, you know, particularly if it's an arrest situation and they're not going to go willingly, and they're giving some kind of indication through words, actions, stance, you know, body language, whatever, then I'm going to have it out and have it ready to go. I think just about everybody understands what a taser is. You know, it's been on television a lot, the TV show Cops and stuff like that. It's been featured a number of times on there. And again, I think that's great. I think the more that people understand, you know, how these work and what they do, and the better off we all are. In fact, that's another thing that I advocate in my training classes is that, you know, we need to promote this to the public as much as possible. You know, my department have Citizens Academy twice a year, and I always come in and do a section on Taser, and I always give them the opportunity to take a brief sample exposure to it if they wish, and many times they step up and take hits. I've done sessions for judges, prosecutors, Rotary Club. I mean, anything that we can do to educate the public about, you know, how they work, what they do, what they don't do, why we use them, why we're so, you know, successful with them and things like that. I think that's to our advantage. There's nothing really secret about it. I think, you know, having the general public on our side, which I think for the most part they are, is to our benefit.
Okay. You mentioned the show Cops.
I don't watch a whole lot of TV, but, you know, every once in a while I'll watch that because to me it is kind of interesting to see how officers do things in different areas of the country. And you'll see a lot of mistakes, and you'll see some really good things done, too. So it's just kind of interesting for me from kind of a tactic standpoint to see how different officers react. And, again, that's probably another good point to make is that if you watch that program, my perception is, again, most of the time, I don't see any situations there where, in my opinion, the officer was too quick to go to less lethal.
And let's talk a little bit about your experience with conducted energy devices. What is, maybe there's a couple incidences that come into the forefront of your mind when you talk about ways that you've personally used it. I know there's an incident with a 13-year-old girl.
Right. This happened in 2001, and our officers got called to a residence where a 13-year-old girl had barricaded herself in the bathroom. She was suicidal, was threatening to slash her wrists, and she threatened to kill anybody that came in to try to stop her. We got a number of officers down there to contain the place, and they were talking to her through the closed door, trying to negotiate with her, trying to get her to, you know, come out and give herself up, and she just kept getting more agitated, and again, they had kind of a plan in place. They had one officer stationed near the door with their pepper spray out. They had time to get a sergeant down there with the M26 taser, and then two of our officers had their handguns out for the lethal force backup, because obviously this is a deadly force situation. At one point, she got so agitated, she told them that she was cutting her wrists, which in fact she was. So they realized they were going to have to take an immediate action. They kicked the door in. When they did that, she come charging out of the bathroom with two large butcher knives, one in each hand, raised over her head, you know, charging at the officers. The officer that had her pepper spray out sprayed her, had no effect. She ran right past her and kept going right towards the other officers. I did talk to both the officers that had their handguns out, and they had both taken up, you know, almost all the slack in their triggers. I mean, they were microseconds away from shooting this girl when the sergeant was able to hit her with the M26. She dropped to the floor, dropped the knives. They took her into custody. There was no injury to anybody. And so, you know, to me, that one incident right there paid for every dime that my agency's put into tasers, because, you know, not only did we avoid taking the life of a 13-year-old girl, we avoided all the other resulting trauma that goes along with that. I mean, that would have been a very difficult situation for those officers to live with. I mean, even though it would have been perfectly legally and morally justified in using deadly force there, that would be a tough thing to live with, to know that you'd taken the life of a kid. Nobody signs up for things like that, but unfortunately those are situations that we're sometimes forced into. We avoided all the negative media attention we would have gotten over that. I mean, the media would have virtually crucified us over killing a child with knives. The resulting lawsuit, which would be almost automatic. You know, again, it's always, you never know how you're going to come out on the outcome of something like that, but the city of Westminster could have spent tens and tens of thousands of dollars just defending themselves in a lawsuit like that. So we avoided all that. And we've had several other incidents since then that, not quite as dramatic because it didn't involve a child, but we've had several incidents where officers were able to use a taser instead of deadly force and save somebody's life. And so I think that's you know, pretty significant.
Okay. I know all of these incidents are unique to their own, you know, circumstantial situation, but maybe you can describe one of the ones that have happened in more recent past that you were involved with.
Yeah, actually I had one just in February, and this one's actually kind of interesting because one thing that I just stress over and over when I teach these classes is the taser is not a replacement for deadly force. It's not a replacement for anything. I don't advocate carrying anything less just because you're carrying a taser. If you're still, you know, if you're carrying a baton and OC, then I recommend you continue to carry those things. I still carry those things. It shouldn't be a replacement or anything. It's just another tool for the toolbox. And so I've always been a real strong advocate about not taking a taser to a gunfight or a knife fight, particularly the gunfight. It's just, you know, extremely risky to use a taser on somebody that's armed with a firearm. However, in February, I did that very thing. And it was a situation where it was a domestic disturbance. When we were responding, the dispatch told us that the person that was calling it in informed us that, I think it was her husband, had threatened that he was going to get his shotgun, and when the cop showed up, he was going to start shooting. And sure enough, we got some officers on scene, set up a perimeter, and sure enough, the guy came out on the porch holding the 12-gauge shotgun. The officers were behind cover. They had numerous firearms trained on him. They're ordering him to drop the gun, drop the gun. He won't drop it. He doesn't necessarily aim it at him. He's kind of holding it at port arms, but he's not aiming it at them. So, and they probably would have shot him anyhow, but his wife was standing right behind him in the doorway, and she refused to leave. So she was in the line of fire. So everybody's using a tremendous amount of restraint, continuing to give him commands, drop the gun. He's refusing to do it. So I got there, and kind of by the time I got there, the guy had sat down on the porch, but he was still holding the gun. And somebody suggested, well, why don't we try and get him with a taser? And I was not real keen about that, but about that time, he actually set the gun down at his feet. And I probably wouldn't have tried this had he still been holding the gun, because, again, I think that's just extremely risky. But he did set the gun down at his feet, but he refused to get away from it. And my fear was that he was just trying to sucker us in, that as soon as we left a position of cover to approach him, that he would grab that gun. And so there was a car parked in the driveway. I was able to get up and deploy from behind cover and shot him with my taser. And one of the other officers, because this was such a high-risk deal, shot him with his taser, too. Unfortunately, we both got just one probe hits on the guy, so it wasn't really having a major effect on him. So then we did have to leave our position of cover and rush him and did some drive stun follow-ups, which allowed us to take him into custody. So that was my most recent taser use.
Part of the issue that, you know, we're talking about today is based on the fact that there's theories that less lethal tools are used too quickly or in place of other things, but you said that it's not a replacement for any of the other tools that they have. It's just an added tool.
It's just another option.
Okay,
so
it's
option form.
So it's really its own category. You know,
well,
you've
it's not necessarily its own category. You know, again, with my department, it's basically at the same level as OC spray. So if an officer gets in a confrontation where force has to be used, it's their choice. They can use pepper spray. They can use taser. If they want to use physical control holds, you know, they can do that. Now, baton is a level higher than that. There has to actually be active resistance or active aggression before they can use that. It's not at the same level that pepper spray and taser are. So it's going to depend on the circumstances. But, you know, it's basically the officer's discretion in certain situations.
Okay. So, you know, we talked a little bit about how the news media has reported on situations where use of taser was maybe unjustifiable or went badly. Is it just those incidences that are giving conducted energy devices a bad rap?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not sure that they really do have a bad rap. The media tries to portray them in a poor light many times by highlighting an isolated incident and then making a huge deal out of it. To give you an example, one of the things that Taser International does is they'll send out a lot of times when there is one of these high-profile cases, particularly, you know, somebody's been hit with a taser and then subsequently after that they die. And, of course, again, it's going to be a huge media event. And a lot of times in the cities where that happens, either a newspaper for that city or a television or radio station will post on their website a survey, do you think officers should continue to use tasers? And in every one of those that I've seen, it's overwhelmingly the public supports that. And most of them are like 75% of the results are people say, yeah, the cops should be allowed to use tasers. I think the public recognizes that. First of all, the media is not going to necessarily be real objective in the way they report these things, and I think they recognize the people that are getting hit with tasers are people that, first of all, are violating the law. And that's something that a lot of people overlook in these situations, is that every one of these situations could have been avoided if the people had just done what the law says. You know, the law requires you to comply with the lawful orders of a police officer. You do not have a legal right to resist arrest. I mean, the law in Colorado, I'm sure, is similar to most other states, that in when you're faced with arrest, you have to submit peacefully. You don't have a right to resist. And when you do resist, then officers are allowed to use reasonable force to overcome that resistance. And again, people kind of tend to forget that, you know, we are reacting to what the suspect's doing. It's not that we're going out looking for a fight. We're reacting to what their actions are. So I'm not really sure that there is a bad rap. I've been fairly fortunate at my department that I've always had really good support. I guess there was one time with one particular lieutenant that was having an issue about something, and I can't remember exactly what all the details were, and I had a little bit of a debate with him. But other than that, not really. No, it's really well received at my department. I'm very fortunate. I don't have to fight the battles that I've heard a lot of other officers talk about, as far as getting their policies written properly, getting the taser put on the use of force spectrum properly, things like that. Some departments are just really hawkish about that kind of stuff, and they kind of overreact sometimes to what they read in the paper. And I find that incredible, because if anybody should know better than to believe what they read in the papers, it should be police officers. But I think sometimes what happens, and again, I'm kind of going out on a limb with my opinion here, but I think that unfortunately, in today's world, we have a lot of police administrators that are extremely out of touch with the realities of policing in today's world. They haven't been on the street in decades. They haven't been around a violent or resistive person in decades. And so they kind of tend to forget what it's like to be in the trenches. And because of the political correctness attitude that seems to be real prevalent today, they want to try and impress their mayor or their city council, or I don't know who they're trying to impress, but then they try to be overly restrictive on these things, and in the process, they are putting their officers at unnecessary risk, in my opinion.
I'm trying to anticipate, if there's any critical listeners, what their argument will be and how you can preempt that with argument against less lethal usage, particularly conducted electronic devices.
I think a big part of this is educating the command staff about how these things work and what the benefits are and why we need to have it placed where we should have it placed on the use of force spectrum. I think a lot of our administrators are really out of touch with those kinds of things. We need to see more of command level officers going to training sessions and going through the training sessions themselves. Not necessarily as instructors, but at least at the user level. I think they need to understand why we're teaching the things that we teach. And I think that would probably alleviate a lot of the concerns if they would just take the time. And I know these people are extremely busy and they're meeting to death and everything else, but I think this is so important, that training is so important, that they need to understand what we're training and why we're training it. And there's really no way of doing that other than just going through the training themselves. So that would be my challenge, I guess, is to the command-level officers of our country, is that they need to start getting themselves more involved with the training, just from the education aspect of it, not necessarily that they're going to be using tasers or using, you know, defensive tactics or anything like that, because I recognize they're pretty much stuck behind a desk. But I think from the education value that they get from that, it would be really important and helpful.
What do you think the ultimate conclusion of the issue with less lethal conducted energy devices, saying that they may be overly used?
Well, I think you have to go back to what is the bottom line of their logic. What are they trying to accomplish? They want to have people taken into custody with less risk of injury. I'm assuming that's what their logic would be, that they think we're just going to these other tools too quickly and maybe creating some risk of injury. And again, I think you can go the other extreme. I think if you get to the point where you're discouraging the use of these tools and you're encouraging your officers to use verbal force to the point that maybe you have to go hands-on before you can actually use a taser or you can use OC, because I know there are departments that actually advocate that you know, you can't use these other tools until you've at least tried to go hands-on first. Well, again, that is flawed logic, because If you go to a SWAT or tactical school, most of them are going to talk about the priority of life model. And what that means is we have to prioritize who's important here. And first of all, at the top are going to be innocent citizens. In the middle is going to be police officers or law enforcement. And at the bottom is going to be the suspects. Anytime that you're talking about tactics and you place the priority of that suspect above either the officers or the citizens, you're using flawed logic. You're making a tactically unsound decision there. And so to me, that's these people that are advocating that, well, you need to use verbal skills or you need to use hands-on skills before you use these tools, they're placing the priority of the suspect above officers. And that's not right. And in the end result is they're also placing it above the priority of the citizen, because we can't protect the public if we're not physically able to do that. If we're defeated in a fight, we're not going to be able to protect anybody. So to me, I think that's just flawed logic. That, you know, the bottom line is we all want to make these arrests with the least risk for injury to everybody. And to me, certainly, I'm not saying that verbal isn't a legitimate use of force. There certainly are times when verbal persuasion is going to work. But there's also a lot of times where it's not going to work, and I don't care how much skill or practice or technique you use, there are certain people that just can't be verbally persuaded, and it's going to take physical force. And so I think it's a mistake to advocate that to the point that you're discouraging your officers from using these things when it's appropriate. And I actually have great faith in our profession. I think overall police officers across the country, from what I've seen, do a great job of reading people, responding appropriately, doing the right thing. There's always going to be exceptions. There's always going to be somebody that makes a bad decision. But overall, I think our profession does a wonderful job of using good discretion, sound judgment, making the right decision, reading people correctly. I mean, that's why we're cops. We're good at that kind of thing. And to advocate that you should not be using these tools, that's a huge step backwards.
Okay, so what I'm gathering is that you're saying, the argument saying that conducted energy devices are overused is a sticky argument, because it's hard to justify an absolute truth, evidenced by each department choosing where they place this kind of a tool on their use of force scale. You can't always say it always should go in this category. And the plethora of circumstances that officers encounter in each situation is too unpredictable to say this is always the answer or this is never the answer.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can't predict every single situation and circumstance that you're going to encounter and have that in a black and white policy. You know, policies have to be somewhat open-ended, somewhat general, so that officers do have some discretion and they have some wiggle room in there to, you know, make the proper decision and not just be, you know, cut right to the, you know, black and white issue there.
Okay. So when we talk about this issue, would it be better to operate under the mantra, some ends justify some means?
Yeah, I suppose you could say that.
What I'm gathering is that the line between teams, the less lethal supporters versus the opponents, is drawn according to whether you trust the police to judge which means are appropriate and which are not, is really what this comes down to, isn't it?
I think that's kind of hitting the nail on the head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sergeant Saylor, I just want to thank you for talking with us today about this, exploring the topic a little bit, giving us some feedback and your thoughts.
My pleasure, and appreciate the opportunity to speak with you about it.